This is pretty much Pop, a culture podcast. Just adding to the lot of talking going on while people are trying to sing their songs. Today we're discussing, in light of the release of Beyoncé's album Cowboy Carter, talking more generally about cross-genre, venturing, the sociological things, all the stuff that's been talked about and written about. Ooh, no, it's a black person doing country music. All the country artists are enraged. See if there's something that we can add to that discussion. My name is Mark Linsenmeyer. I think if I were going to do a cover of Dolly Parton's Jolene, I would not remove all the vulnerability from it. But that's just me.
I'm Al Baker, tragically confined by my own very, very staid genre.
I'm Sarah Lynn Bruck, and I used to be mad at Jolene, but now I think she should get the heck out of Dodge.
And this is Lawrence Ware, and I have a lot of say, and I'm going to release 20-plus tracks saying what I want to say while simultaneously maybe not saying much at all.
Whoa. So we talked about doing a Beyoncé episode. We had done a Taylor Swift episode at some point, and Beyoncé certainly has as much of a cultural footprint. I'm going to say this is not our Beyoncé episode. Maybe we'll do that sometime, but as someone who has a music podcast and whose standards are very high in terms of how much prep I want to put in, I'll say this experience of listening to the new album a couple times, venturing a little bit more into the old stuff, was a significant step in opening my heart to this phenomenon, but I don't really feel like I would want to weigh in critically on Beyoncé's work, much less, you know, her whole career or anything in the way that I would feel comfortable doing with one of my normal music guests. If she'd come on the show, I'll put in the 40 hours of prep work required for that.
Same girl, same.
I agree this shouldn't be that episode, but mainly because I think there is enough interesting stuff to talk about just in this album. It will easily keep us occupied for the time, and we barely be able to get onto anything else that she's done, I think.
I think this should not be a Beyoncé episode because I really don't feel like this is a very good Beyoncé album. I think it's a fine Beyoncé album. It's decent. It's not bad. Certainly not. Nothing she does is ever really bad. But I just don't think this album was very successful. There's like 6, maybe 7 good country songs in there. And then there's like 19 plus or 18 plus songs that are just like country adjacent, hip hop. Mostly, this album feels like it is all over the place. There are some high highs, but there is a lot. There's no low lows, but there's a lot of middling with me in this album.
Not only do I not have like a Beyoncé expertise, I also don't have country music expertise either. And for that matter, I don't really have music expertise.
Then why are you here? Why are you here then? You don't know nothing.
I was asked, Lawrence. And I listened to it many times. I really actually enjoyed this album, I'll have to say. That's my hot take. I enjoyed it.
No, I enjoyed it. I just don't think it's very good, but I enjoyed it. Yeah, sure.
It's no Lemonade.
Even booking. That was the low point for me. Sorry.
I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to, but I think that's because the album that I got wasn't the album that I expected to get. So if I can just self-indulgently talk about my journey with the album for a second, and then maybe you guys can do...
Yes, please.
So I knew we were going to do this, and I was very disciplined before the podcast. I didn't want to listen to little bits outside of the album. I wanted to approach it as an album. So I heard Texas Hold'em before, but that was the only track I heard externally to the album. And otherwise, all I was exposed to was the discourse. And the discourse was exactly as Mark hinted at, like, country people are enraged that Beyoncé is doing a country album. And there was I saw some really full-throated support of Beyoncé, like making an interesting album, doing an interesting thing and taking on like the oppressive role of genre seemed to be what people thought that she was doing and were praising her for that. And I saw some really interesting critiques as well from people who were saying that this was kind of a pantomime of what black revolutionary country music might look like, and that she wasn't quite doing what she thought she was doing in terms of like breaking down the oppressive qualities of genre. I went into all that, and the first track on the album is American Requiem, which was incredibly confusing because it's not a country song and it's not a Beyoncé song, and I didn't know what it was doing there. And the second track was a cover of Blackbird by the Beatles, and that's a very nice cover of a very nice song, but I have no idea what that was doing as the second track on the album either. So at that point, I was just intensely confused because I'd been led to expect this like revolutionary mashup between Beyoncé global superstar pop queendom and like full-throated Texas country music, and I had nothing like that so far. However, track three, which is 16 Carriages, absolutely blew me away and is by far my favorite song on the album. And I really wish that had been the first one, because that is a much clearer like introduction to this is what it's like when Beyoncé does country and does it really well. And then as the album went
on, can I throw in though? Yeah. Like that still gets super symphonic. Like I like that about it, but like that's one that I thought, oh, okay, this is sort of in the country mode. But now it's become this giant, like, okay, I guess that's a way of subverting, of expanding country music, is that you can bring in your choir of 50 people and your whatever you need to do. Anyway, go on, Al.
No, you're right. But it was still at least like I recognized what the album was supposed to be about in that song, I guess. And just, I'm going to throw back to Lawrence here, because I completely see where you're coming from when you say the album's all over the place. But I found as I was going through it, a really coherent kind of musical story being told, starting in a much more, like once we got to the third track, starting in a much more recognizably country place, and then ending up in a countryfied Beyoncé place rather than a Beyoncified country place, if that makes sense. And I found the journey of the album pretty satisfying, albeit, as you say, with only maybe three or four absolutely standout tracks. But that's a good number of standout tracks for an album by anyone's standard, really.
Even 27 tracks?
Some of them are 22 seconds long. It's an arbitrary number.
It's still a lot of tracks. Okay, all right, let me tell you my journey. I have been a fan of Beyoncé Knowles since she was with Destiny's Child. So I've been with her for a very long time. I've gone through the highs and lows. When she broke out and did her solo thing, the first album was good. It showed promise. It wasn't great. But really, for me, she reached her apex with Lemonade. I think that is a balls to the wall, nonstop, absolutely great album. No missed tracks, no missed shots on that album. That album should have won Album of the Year at the Grammys, but of course the Grammys, we know, does not like black people. Okay, let's keep going. And that is not something that I'm telling you, Biggie didn't win a Grammy. Tupac didn't win a Grammy. The first time that Kendrick Lamar went up for a Grammy, he lost to a white rapper. So don't tell me the Grammys love black people, because they don't. Okay, so we'll keep going.
I don't think we have any Grammy defenders on the call.
Where is he at? Okay, good. Okay, I'm just anyone who's listening and thinking I'm being facetious, I am not. All right, the Grammys do not like black people. Now, her more recent stuff, I have not loved. Like her last album, Renaissance, it just wasn't for me. It was in that electronic mode, and that's just not my thing. I don't like that, you know. But people liked it, so you know, I let them like it. This album, I wanted to like this. I am a black man from Oklahoma. I am saturated in country music, right? Country music is everywhere. I live down the street from a Toby Keith, rest in peace, bar and grill, all right? Like, I am saturated in country music. I don't really mess with a lot of it, but I do appreciate good parts. And I appreciate, for example, when Ray Charles did a country album, which was a great country album. Like, I appreciate good country music. And so I went into this with an open heart, hoping for a really good, interesting country album. So I clicked, because I usually get a vinyl of a record that I really love. I didn't get a vinyl of this one. I didn't think I was going to like it that much. But I clicked on the Apple Music thing, and before I started playing the album, I looked at the tracks. And I saw there was 27 tracks! 27 tracks! One album, 27 tracks. And I knew before I started it, I was not going to like this album. It's just too much. It's bloated. It's self-indulgent. Now, as I have said, there are some good country songs in here, right? One of them is a standout that Al has already commented on, which is 16 Carriages. Mm-hmm. But why is a remake of a Lennon McCarthy song right before that song. Like, why is that on there? Right? And I get that there's black female country singers on that song, but that is not a country song. It's not. Why is it there? Right? And like, there are things on here that are country adjacent. Texas Hold'em, for example, that's country adjacent. Right? But it's not a true. I wanted a country song featuring Beyonce's amazing vocals. She can sing, and the vocal production on this album is top notch. That she can sing. There is no question about that. She can sing. I don't understand this album, guys. It is all over the place. There is no singular focus. There may be a story that's being told, but it's being told with hip hop, it's being told with techno country, and it's being told with R&B. Like, it's all over the place. So I know we're going to have a larger conversation about mashups and all kind of stuff, and that's fine. I need the record to be known. I love Beyonce. I want good things for her. I want good albums from her. This was not a good album. It's not a bad album, but it's not a good album.
But doesn't she always, or aren't there like over 100 tracks that she recorded, you know, and that this was her curation of those tracks? And I was also trying to think of, I don't disagree with you, Lawrence. I personally really, really enjoyed this album. I listened to it from first to 27, like three or four times. First to 27. And I really liked it, but you're right. It is kind of all over the place, and it doesn't seem to be telling a story necessarily as an album, but there were definitely some bangers in there. I mean, there were some that I would put in my running mix for sure.
There are bangers. Yes. But the album is not a banger, but there are bangers.
Yeah.
Come on, Mark. You're the music aficionado. You are the guru of music. You are the, not Han Solo, the Yoda of music, the Luke Skywalker of music. Come on, man.
I'm just interested that part of your response was from the genre protection perspective, that like this promised to be a country album, but it didn't have the thing about country that you like. And I think that's what a lot of country artists are reacting to. And that's, I completely agree that Texas Hold'em has some woos. It has some very surface level country characteristics. But I guess that's the question, is like, what actually makes a genre? Is it just the surface level characteristics? Because in lots of ways, it is.
It's not just that. No, it's a soul. Like, part of country is melancholy.
Sure.
Vulnerability. There is a musicality that we expect from country, like, you know, the particular instruments and whatnot. But it's not just instrumentation. It's the spirit, right? It's the melancholy. It's the feel of country. And Texas Hold'em, while it is country adjacent, it doesn't have that feel, right? It's like a soulless country song. Like, it doesn't really have that feel.
So, like, Garth Brooks, probably. Not that I'm an ex-Garth Brooks expert or anything, but the little bit I've heard of him over the years, or at least when he got popular, the stuff that was like, oh, it's basically just rock and roll with a hat. I think that was the same criticism was vaunted on that. Now, does that now count as country? Does it count as country just because he's wearing the hat? And, you know, I guess that's specifically with country. It seems like the fashion has more to do with it often than the music. Or at least there's more. It's in an interesting position that has been associated with this particular style. I guess, you know, reggae is another one of like a particular dressing like Bob Marley, that whereas lots of other genres don't have that.
It's not just the style. I mean, like I can wear a country hat and do rap, and that's not country. Like, it's not the style, right? Like, rappers from Houston, they've always like meddled with country fashion and big belt buckles and all. It's not the style. Like, when I think of the great country album, now I'm not a country aficionado, so people who are listening to this who are, come for me if you want to. I'm not an aficionado, but when I think of things like I Am What I Am by George, I think it was George Jones who did that one, or Modern Sounds, right, by Ray Charles. Like, when I think about that, it's a feel. Like, Ray Charles never really, I don't think he did, put on a big cowboy hat and wore cowboy boots to say this is real country music. He just did a great country album, right? And it was the sound, it was the feel, and that's just what this album is missing. It feels like it's pantomiming country without having the soul of country. Now, there are a few songs on here. Like I said, there's 27 tracks, so it's going to be a couple, right? Just like there are a couple bangers that are really not country music. And I mean, it's country twang, but it's not really country music. And there's a few soulful country songs. But as far as a coherent album, right? I'm looking at this as a album. As far as a coherent album from start to finish, this is not a great country album. It's not a good country album, right? It's a fine one, but not a good one.
So then that sort of begs the question, what makes country country? Because country music, like all forms of music, has evolved over time.
Absolutely.
It's not just about like hillbillies and stuff, you know, like it was, I don't know, back in the 40s and 50s, but...
Okay, I'm sensing some East Coast bias in what you're saying there.
Oh, no.
Hillbillies? Hillbillies.
Oh, okay.
Hillbillies are in the mountains of West Virginia. They're not in the South, like maybe rednecks. Oh, come on,
no,
man.
I have family from the Deep South that migrated to California.
They wouldn't call themselves hillbillies?
Oh, yes, they did.
Oh, my gosh.
They loaded up that truck and they moved to Beverly.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Shut up, Mark. By the way, I love that show. But go ahead.
But isn't there, like, I just think in terms of, like, instruments, like the banjo, mm-hmm. the fiddle, like the twang, as you said, you know, like that kind of stuff. That's what, for me, sort of shifts it over to country for me. But I don't really listen to much of it because I don't really like a lot of it. But what does make country music?
What makes a musical genre a musical genre, or a genre of anything is a weird question because it invites all of the kind of confusions that we've all kind of outlined. So just think, for instance, of like all the huge varieties of rap that there are, mm-hmm. but they all count as rap, which is a genre simply because of the fact that like the words are spoken and not sung for the most part is going to be what combines all of rap together. But that's only one part of the music. And just because you like one kind of rap doesn't mean you're going to write like another kind of rap. And it doesn't mean that they have a whole lot to do with one another at all. So country music, I mean, there's a whole bunch of types of country music. And a lot of them are typified by where they come from, and a lot of them are typified by the instruments that they involve or don't involve, or the kinds of subject matter that they sing about, or just the people involved, or even just the radio station that it plays on. Something that would be a rock song if it was released in Michigan might be a country song because it's released in Texas, and the local radio station there is a country radio station, right? So that's a country band now. So it's confusing, and there's never going to be a clear answer, I think, about what any particular genre is. But it raises an interesting question, which is what Beyoncé thought she was doing when she said, I'm going to make a country album, or I'm going to make an album that blends these various genres together. Like, what did she think the genre of country was, such that the album she made is a country album?
Well, she herself said this was a Beyoncé album, not a country album.
Here's what I'm going to say I think happened here. And then I have a question for Mark, because this will get us into the overarching question of this particular episode. I think that when Beyoncé started, she thought she was making a country album. Like, that was her intent. She was going to make a country album. But then she started going, and Beyoncé, like, when she makes an album, it's like a army that comes together to make this album for her. Like, the producers, the writers... If you look at the credits, they're all over the place. There are many, many credits, right? A lot of samples, all that kind of stuff, which is typically not in a country song. You typically don't sample a country. You do an R&B and hip-hop, but not in country. Anyway, so she started working on the album, is my suspicion, right? And took her years to do so. And when she was about to put it out, like, she was still fine-tuning it. Like, she was still working on this album late into the production process, like, late until, like, it was about to be released. And then I think that she realized, okay, this is not really a country album. Like, this is something different. And that's the reason why she came out and said, this is not a country album, because she was trying to mess with our expectations, and said, this is not country, this is Beyoncé, right? And when she said that, right, it was late in the cycle of making this album, and she realized what she had on her hands was not a really good country album, right? And I don't even think it's a really good Beyoncé album. You know, one of the things that this tells me, that is so many tracks and there's so many people working on this, is that I wonder if anyone was able to edit her, right? Was anyone able to say to her, this is not a good idea. Like, what you're doing here with this song, this is not working, right? Because that's what she needed, right? She needed someone to say to her that this song, Yaya, for example, it's a banger. It is a hardcore banger. I like that song. I've added it to my playlist. Mm-hmm. It is not a country song. It's not, right? It should not be included in an album that's supposed to be country adjacent. It shouldn't. It is a hip hop song. It's a hip hop. It's hard R&B. I don't know what it is, but it's not country. It's not mm-hmm. that.
Right. That when it gets good, it's like James Brown. Like that's what some of her other work, like that's how I understand it, is like it's very rousing in a James Brown sort of way, or Aretha Franklin, or what, you know. Soul.
Absolutely. But it is not country. It's not country.
Let's stop for some sponsor talk. Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's No Prep, No Mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes, so no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great-tasting meals. Make today the day you kickstart a new healthy routine. You got 35 different meals and 60 add-ons to choose from every week. These are restaurant-quality meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, and blackened salmon. Make your day delicious. From breakfast to dessert, stay fueled with easy, nutritious options with no shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Crush your wellness goals this May with dietitian-approved meals and ingredients you can trust. Enjoy effortless support for your lifestyle. Choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced. Head to factormeals.com/pretty50 and use code pretty50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code pretty50 at factormeals.com/pretty50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. This is Mark.
And this is Wes.
We'd like to tell you about Close Reads,
a philosophy podcast where we comment on philosophy texts in real time.
We give you the experience of reading very difficult verbiage without you having to actually do that.
We cover the big names and the figures you've always wanted to know more about.
And share our insights from 15 years running the Partially Examined Life podcast, downloaded over 50 million times.
Join us
on Close Reads.
She needed someone to say to her, put this on the next album, right? Don't put it on this one. Because there are, like, as I said, 6-7 really good country songs here. If she would have hampered down, released a much trimmer album, it would have worked much better. This is a monster. This is like Transformers mixed with Voltron, mixed with The Blob. It's a lot of stuff going on in this album, and there is nothing coherent.
I don't disagree. But
I do.
It's part of like it's the second of a trilogy,
of
right?
Of course, Al does. Of course, Al does. I love you, Al. I love you, Don. Go. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But it's the second of a trilogy, and I'm excited to see what that third album is, so that maybe there will be some sort of a connection here that's missing now that will be there then.
It'll be all Billy Joel covers.
This is not a movie, dog. This is not that kind of trilogy. Go ahead, Al.
There's certainly a decent dollop of self-indulgence going on in this album.
It's more than a dollop, sorry.
A really big, healthy dollop. But I think if anyone has earned the right to be a little bit self-indulgent, it is Beyoncé. So, this is a matter of taste, but I really don't mind like a 30, 40 track long what would have been a double album previously. I used to like it when we had more of these kind of big magnum opuses, even though, you know, they're at risk of being a bit unwieldy and whatever else. All those points are taken. But I think that you are not taking Beyoncé where she's at with this album. I don't think she did want to make a country album, and I don't think she did decide later that she wanted to make a Beyoncé album. I think this album, the story of this album that I alluded to picking up on, seems to me to be explicitly about her wanting to make an album that is not confined by standards of genre. And she's picked country and like her own stuff and various other things to focus on for this album. But I don't think it's about being a country album so much as it is about being unconfined. And I think that makes the album better, but I still don't think it's necessarily a good approach, because the best stuff on the album, to my mind, is the stuff that is more confined by one of the genres that she's working in. And when it moves too quickly from one to the other is where I think they fall apart a bit.
I think you may have something there. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think that if you go back into the history and you talk about her going to the CMAs and the response that she got at the CMAs, and that, although I think, to be honest, I think that response was more to the Dixie Chicks than to her. Because she was performing the Dixie Chicks. Yeah, she was performing with the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah, I watched it.
And they really do not like the Dixie Chicks. Like, the politics of the Dixie Chicks, like, really rub up against a lot of country artists. And so I think they're responding more to the Dixie Chicks than to her, but they did respond to her negatively. And that being her motivation to make this particular album, I think you're onto something. I think you're onto something, Al, that she's trying to play with genre. She's trying to muddy the line by playing in country. And when she does, she's really good. I mean, because she's a good artist. But I just think that this is just a little too much, right? Maybe give me 6-7 tracks and then 3 that play. Don't give me 27. Like, 27 is too much. I mean, I cannot think of an album that had 20-plus tracks that I like. I can't think of one.
Well, I think it's time to reveal the real reason for the length of the album, which is the new Pretty Much Pop Bible that contains the full text of the Bible and all the lyrics to this to these songs. And we needed to fill out the pages. So I told her, I told Beyonce, just keep making songs until we filled out the pages for the Bible that is $79.99.
I am a ordained clergy person. And as an ordained clergy person, I cannot co-sign that blasphemy that you just put out there in those streets.
If that was a Trump impression, you should postpone your plans for a political satire podcast.
That was the spirit of Trump. That was the spirit of Trump. I was not trying to do the Trump voice.
You should have done the Trump voice. So this brings me to another question. All right, so let's move beyond Beyonce. Now, let me ask. Now, I didn't prep you guys on this. But let me ask you guys this question. Can you think of a artist or an album where an artist was in one genre and they jumped genres as she's attempting to do, and it was successful? Can you think of one, right? Because usually artists kind of play in their genre and they kind of stick with it. They may play with going in other areas, but they usually don't jump. Right. She's trying to jump. She said, I don't know if she did. Can you guys think of an album where the artist was like a hip hop artist and they chose to do soul music, or a person was a soul musician and they chose to do hardcore reggae? Like, can you think of an artist who did this successfully? Can this be done?
Didn't Beastie Boys do that?
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of examples. So, like, a really good one
The Beastie Boys is an example that did it well, because they were punk, if I remember correctly, and they jumped over to hip hop. But they were always kind of hip hop to me, even their early stuff.
They've also done other styles of music too. I mean, not country, but they haven't always done rap. You know, they haven't always done R&B.
Well, they've never done R&B.
Bands who change their direction as they go. Like Taylor Swift's another good example, right? She was a country star and country singer, and then she moved into pop. And there's like Lady Gaga, who started writing like standard pop songs and then did her own thing.
But I don't see Lady Gaga as going in a whole different direction. Like, she
the point I'm making this is different cases where bands do like one-off ventures into a completely different genre. For some reason, the two that spring to mind are Robbie Williams, a pop star who made a swing album that I had when I was a kid. And Bruce Springsteen did a folk, an oldie-timey folk album.
Was it successful to your
It was great. It was amazing. It was one of my favorite albums ever. But he also has done like acoustic folk stuff, so maybe it's not so much of a stretch. All that to say, I don't think it's that rare. I think it happens all the time. But when people do that, they're usually saying, oh, I am going to have a bit of fun and, as a side project, make an album that's not in my usual kind of genre. It's not like Beyonce, who's saying, this is one of my main series of albums and this is the real deal. It's not a side project. This is my main thing.
We might want to define genre more tightly just in terms of the rhythms that are used. That, you know, what makes rock and roll is having the rock and roll. So there's so many things that are categorized as rock and roll that, in fact, do not rock and are not intended to rock. They're ballads, they're whatever. And so likewise, you know, if country, I think, is defined by not being groovy, right? There are plenty of groovy kinds of music.
I mean,
but country music is square.
There's country line dancing. I mean, it can be groovy-ish.
I don't hold with this kind of naive formalism, Mark. I'm not going to...
Is it just all about vibe? Is that what you're saying?
Right. So pair this with, you're only able to put out what you can authentically take in, what actually moves you. And so I'm not going to connect with certain kinds of really slow old country songs or really any slow jazz. Like, I'm just thinking of these people from the 50s or early 60s who are just... Yeah, a really slow Sinatra song, like, I cannot get into, because I have made that jump to expecting some sort of beat, some sort of groove, some sort of rock, and just can't roll back the clock. But if I had also incorporated that into me such that it was just a thing that, okay, well, it doesn't fit my regular day job, but this is a thing that I've always enjoyed and I want to do this, then I think it is completely coherent to do that as a separate project or, you know, as a one-off song or whatever. So it's just whatever. I just don't think that Beyoncé actually has taken in that she actually likes a lot of what country fans like about country. And so she's not going to turn around and, in her own natural style, is going to deliver that lack of groove, for instance, that when she just has really evident aggressive grooves in her.
You mean, so there's something cool. There's something in the nature of country. Yeah, she's too cool to possibly make country music.
Yeah.
I think that's part not of it. Take I seen don't, before.
I don't think country singers would agree with that statement. Like, you have to be square to make country music? Is that what you're trying to say here? Is that what we really want to leave this podcast and get all the hate mail? Saying that you have to be not cool to do country. Is that what we
obviously
want to say?
Cool and square are two vague terms. There's plenty of ways to be cool. You know, doing some of those slow, smoky things. Like, that's very cool on some definition. But in terms of the groove, it is not, it is square as opposed to groovy.
And I think groove for you is a more objective more objective criterion than genre itself.
Yes,
that's
yes.
So weird to me that so like heavy metal is also you would
not,
say
not
is,
very groovy
heavy
generally.
Metal.
Not very.
No, it's
groovy.
Heavy.
No.
It's heavy.
It's heavy, but it does not actually groove you. I had Narada Michael Walden. I don't know if you know him. He's a anyway. You can look him up. I had him on the podcast at one point. He's a drummer. He produced Whitney Houston albums. He did. You know, it was sort of alternate history Michael Jackson in terms of his solo career. Very interesting guy, but he was saying to me that it's always the groove that makes things stick with you. So he was like, even the squarest song, Incense and Peppermint, but like, he was given that example of a very, very white, in quote, song from the 60s, but that has actually had staying power because of its groove, as opposed to, you know, these things that are characterized as white people took black music and made it boring. Like, those Pat Boone songs, nobody plays those Pat Boone songs anymore. That groove, according to his theory, was like something that, you know, is a way of catching things that, so this is what I'm contrasting to, you know, that she's not making, maybe this is because I don't like country as much as many people, yeah. But it's not boring enough.
But I wonder, I mean, her Texas Hold'em hit the country charts in like 4 days. It took
Sarah,
no time.
Hold on for a second.
Okay.
He said, I'm sorry, Mark. I'm sorry, Sarah. Mark, you just said that you don't like this, that this is not boring enough for you. And so therefore, like, I need you to restate that. Because you're going to offend a lot of country music people. Like, what are you saying there?
Well, I'm saying this as a total country outsider, but given that I have spent a lot of time, you know, I've played Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys in my live set. Like, I have,
right,
you know, interviewed and listened to the entire catalogs of several country artists, but I come at it from a fundamental point of disrespect. I think that my first introductions to country was like the Rolling Stones doing country songs in a very disrespectful way. You know, the Beatles, when they do Act Naturally or they do, you know, anything that Ringo sings, these are not respectful takes on country. And so that was my way in. A band like Cracker, you know, with the name Cracker, California dudes, maybe who have some roots in the South, but that are, you know, basically doing alt country. So I've listened to and identify, and I, even some of my own songs count as alt country, but they are very different from the stuff that draws on soul more. I mean, that's just the contrast that I would make. That
so
I,
you just fundamentally enjoy, you don't like it.
I enjoy both. I mean, this was a way into it to me. And so even very pure country, and especially old time country, you know, Willie Nelson or whatever, like I can very much get into, but I just think that there's a fundamental divide between that kind of stuff and something that has an actual groove. And this is ultimately what we're talking about, is the people that are objecting to her are saying, you're not doing what we think country is, because we think country, I'm not going to say just has a lack of groove. That's not the way they would characterize it, but that's kind of what it comes down to.
Okay, I'm sorry, Sarah. Go ahead, Sarah. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was just bouncing off that because her Texas Hold'em hit the country charts within 4 days of it coming out. And so that indicates to me that she's doing country, like, and people are enjoying it and listening to it, you know? And maybe it's because, you know, I'm sure there's a huge Beyonce effect attached to that, but it takes a long time for any song to get into the charts anyway. And then let alone a Black country artist being able to hit the charts. I mean, it just feels like it almost never happens, you know? So I think she's doing something that is resonating with people who listen to country, with that audience.
Yeah. And clearly my ideas of country have more to do with the 70s and the 80s than they do with anything that's happened in this millennium. So don't even
fucking
listen.
I think Al is about to say something profound.
No.
Because he's been pondering here for a second. Go ahead, Al.
I really wasn't. I want to talk more about what Beyonce thinks she's doing with the album. Because it's really, there's a moment, and it's not her, it's one of the other women that she's singing with. There's a moment where on the album someone says, like, genre is a funny thing. It does X and Y, but for some people it may feel confining. Mm-hmm. And yeah, clearly a part of the motivation of Beyonce making this album was to put a middle finger up at the, like, country community who had rejected her, or the people she refers to from back home who weren't okay with her singing country music because she was Black. And if that's the case, what genre does she think she's trapped in is one of the questions. The question actually is, what does she think a genre is such that it is confining her, right? Is the genre that she's talking about the group of people who excluded her? And is it the thing that ties them together? Is it actually just the style of music? Because Beyonce's pretty free, like, her albums are very different from one another musically. She's pretty free to do whatever she wants with. She's not a confined pop star like some pop stars are. She can make, as evidenced by this album, she can make whatever music she wants to. So what does she feel confined by, and what did she feel the need to escape from?
God, that's such a tough question. I just keep thinking, is she looking for approval of some kind? Is she, like, what is she? I do wonder what she wants. Like, she already has a humongous following, you know?
Because this is where Lawrence's criticisms make sense. If what she's trying to do is stick the middle finger up by saying, look, I can make a fucking great country album.
Right.
Then Lawrence is right. It's not successful because it's not a straightforward country album.
I mean, she doesn't need more fans. She's good on fans. She's not Taylor Swift level, but she's good. She's good on fans. So I don't think she's chasing fans or fandom. And I don't think that she was trying to gain new fans in the country music realm by making an album that appeals to her. So that was clearly not the motivation. So let's put that to the side. I do think that she might have wanted to show that a Black woman can do country well and maybe even do country better than some country artists. That does seem to mesh with her ego, with her artistic kind of ambitions. And if that was what she was trying to do, she failed with this album, because this album is not a good country album. It's just too interested in too many other things. Now, I don't think Beyoncé is not smart enough to know that. She knows that, like, she knew that this album was going to be too wide-ranging, wasn't going to be a true country album. So that brings us back to the question that Al is asking. What was it that she feels confined by? I don't have an answer for that. I do not know. But I do think that she's making commentary on country genre. She's making commentary on R&B. She's really started to move, if you've noticed, if you like followed her career, away from singing to rapping more in her most recent stuff. She raps a lot more. I don't love it when she does it, but people do, and that's fine. That's just not, that's not the thing that I don't, that's not what I want from Beyoncé. I want her to sing. So she clearly feels confined by genre in some way, right? Whether it be R&B, whether it be hip hop, she's trying to kind of bridge the gap. And she's like now playing with country. She's playing with all these different styles of music. I don't know what it is she feels confined by, but she's clearly trying to play with different styles of music. Now, that is absolutely clear, right? I just don't know what that answer is.
My best guess still is that she feels like the concept of genre, as in there is a fence garden of music called country that I'm excluded from because I'm this kind of artist, not that kind of artist, that whole structure is what bugs her. And so my sense is that she feels like she shouldn't have to say that she belongs in one genre or in another, or that a particular song is in one genre or another. But if that's the case, that's also confusing, because so clearly this is country, but then maybe it's just like this is the one you pick because it's the most stark contrast, or it's the most interesting because of where you're from, or whatever else it might be. But even so, there's something odd about the fact that you're making all this fuss over what is essentially, as Mark pointed out, how much groove you're prepared to take out of a Beyoncé song, or like how many banjos you're prepared to put into it. Because one of the more interesting criticisms I've seen of this album that I think is right is that the country elements of it are pretty shallow.
Yeah.
Or a lot of them are very shallow. It's just a matter of what instruments you're using, or like what kind of accent you're singing, or the fact that Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson are doing little bits with you. I don't know how much of a problem that is, but I think there are more interesting ways of doing mashups that are doing genre mashups that take the genres that you're mashing up a bit more seriously in terms of the cultural roots of them.
This could have gone worse in so many ways. I could just picture her doing, there's a song that the Byrds covered. It's a classic country song. I like the Christian life. Look that song up. If she had done that song, oh my God, it would have, maybe she could have done it great if she reinterpreted it.
I'm happy that she did. I will say that there is one song on the album that is absolutely outstanding. And honestly, I think the person she's singing with might have outdone her. It's Most Wanted. What is it called? Two Most Wanted. Anyway, Most Wanted with Miley Cyrus.
The Miley Cyrus one is great.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
That is an amazing song. And one of the
things, their harmony is so beautiful.
But one of the things that I failed to appreciate is how good of a singer Miley Cyrus is.
Right.
Like, she is amazing on that track. I never took Miley Cyrus very seriously because of the whole Hannah Montana or whatever. But that song shows she can sing. Like, she has depth of feeling. She sings from her soul. It's a very soulful song, but it still reads as kind of country to me. It's still very much country to me. But that's an amazing song. Like, there are songs on this album that are standout songs. Like, I even think the song with Dolly Parton's pretty good. I think the song with Willie Nelson's pretty good. 16 characters. Like, there are standout songs. So I don't want people to walk away thinking that this is a bad album. It's not bad. There are really, really high highs on this album. It's just that she's a little too self-indulgent. She does too much. She wants to do too many things and maybe release a double album. And the first one is hardcore country. And the second one is like a mix of what she wants to do. But as a single album, as a singular statement, as I believe now we've gotten away, and this gets into a whole nother conversation about how albums are not as important anymore. And I don't necessarily agree with that, but as an album, this does not work. But there are songs on here that do work. And so the issue for me is that I still take seriously, as Prince once said brilliantly, like Black Lives, albums still matter. I agree with him. Like, albums do matter. An album as a statement of purpose, as a complete idea, like concept albums, whatever, they matter. And as an album, this doesn't work. But there are songs on this album that if she had cut them out and released them individually, collectively, would have been an amazing album. I just wish she had done that. She just didn't do that this time.
Don't you think the Miley Cyrus song, I'm so glad that you brought that up, that was a genuine surprise, like a delightful surprise. And I wasn't surprised that she had Dolly Parton. I wasn't, you know, Willie Nelson wasn't a surprise. I was sort of waiting for, I didn't have too many expectations going in with this, but one was I thought maybe she would have something new to say about the genre and being able to bring in some artists that were unexpected. It would have been nice to have seen, you know, more collaboration with Black female country artists, where their voices really stood out more. That would have been nice. And I wonder what kind of ended up on the cutting room floor. I would love to know what the other 75 songs that she didn't include on this album, what those were.
This is not enough for Sarah. She wants the expanded edition.
She wants more.
I do. I'm actually really curious because it is. It's so, this album is so disparate, you know?
But it was just another 45 minutes of bucking. Sorry.
78 minutes.
That's not what it was. Although I will say I did enjoy that she included Linda Martell, a legendary Black female country singer. She featured her prominently. Like, she knows her stuff. Like, she knows her music. She knows her history. And she's a student of history. I just wish that the album was a little bit more cohesive. You know, and I'm going to keep saying that. I know Mark's going to get irritated because I keep saying the same thing over and over again. But that's just what's missing here. It's just that cohesion. And I wish I would have gotten it. I didn't get it. I'm happy for the songs I did get that worked. But they're not. It's not an album that you listen to from beginning to end. You have to skip around. Mm-hmm. But there's good stuff here. It's just covered by a lot of muck.
I think Lawrence is spectacularly wrong about...
Al and I are going to fight. I don't know why we fight so much, Al. Go ahead, Al.
I don't disagree, like, in the end with your judgment of like how good the album is, I guess, and what's wrong with it, but like why it doesn't quite measure up, I do disagree with very strongly. Firstly, I agree with you, albums are important. I don't think they matter anymore, but I think they should matter a lot more than they do. And I think Beyonce has done here is has delivered an album, capital A, which is self-indulgent and meandering, but is coherent and is a coherent body of work and is a coherent story through it. It takes you on a beautiful journey, is a really well-curated track list with the exception of the first couple. We got a lot more quiet tracks from the beginning, a lot more straightforward country tracks in the beginning, more collaborations through the middle, and then towards the end you get a lot more like banging country-fied Beyonce songs. I think if American Requiem was the last track rather than the first, it would be a really brilliant tale for it, because the whole album takes you through a number of, it's exactly what it says in the tin insofar as it's Beyonce exploring different sounds through a couple of genres. And it's really nicely done. I think it rewards listening from beginning to end, and it's a very coherent body of musical work. What I think is less coherent, and the place where it fails, is in some of the individual tracks, and it's in the ways that the genres are mixed together, like particularly some of the more Beyonce banging tracks. Texas Hold'em is, I think, a good example. It's one of my least favorite songs on the album because it's just a, it's a Beyoncé floor filler, but with a little country twang on it, and it annoys me. I know it's a big breakaway hit, but still, I don't mind being I don't mind being an iconoclast there. I much prefer the stuff that was either more clearly country music or more clearly like Ya Ya, which is great. But that's just, as Lauren said, that's just a Beyoncé song. But the journey that she takes you through, I think, is very coherent and well put together. I just think some of the choices in some of the songs don't quite work. Jolene is another one. Again, you get it, and you get what she's trying to do. It's too much.
It's an interesting exercise, that Jolene cover of it's a very vulnerable song, and she's just going to make it more like, you stay away from my man, you bitch. And that's the reinterpreted, like, it's interesting that someone did it, but like, I didn't necessarily need it, you know, but it's wonderfully sung and has some really cool stuff at the end of it. And, you know, so I'm not going to second guess an artist. Like, she's at the point, I think self-indulgent is not necessarily a bad thing. I think when somebody has gotten to this level of fame and this level of,
come on, she's no, it is a bad thing.
When you have fans that will follow you and see what you think your vision is, have your individual artistic vision and present it whole hog. Like, if that's really what she was doing and she feels strongly about it, then bully for her that she's in a business position where she can do that. Because most people, even pretty famous people, if they do a left turn, then like, oh, you find actually they didn't like you for you. They liked you for that feeling that you gave them when you were doing that James Brown like thing or whatever the thing that they think that she might think that she's being confined by. So she might be being contrary just to be, you know, these are things I like and I want to do them. And until I stop selling so well, I'm going to keep doing that. I don't know. I don't begrudge her that. But again, I'm not in the position like you are, Lawrence, where you have such a background in her body of work that you can say, actually, this is bloated and this is does not work as well as the essence of what she does. Like, I'm just not in that position. So maybe you're right, Lawrence.
One thing that I did not expect to happen today is that a man from Britain would defend this album and the country bona fides of this album. And I would be like on the other side of him. Al always surprises me. He never fails to surprise me. I love Al. He does. He never does.
I'm a fan of country music. I haven't said that anyway. I've got. Okay. I like Appalachian country music a lot better than Yorkshire folk music.
Very nice. I don't know. Anytime an artist becomes self-indulgent, their art's going to suffer. Francis Ford Coppola releasing Megalopolis, and I hear it's deeply, deeply self-indulgent. Or Martin Scorsese.
Brian Wilson.
I was just going to say Brian Wilson.
Brian Wilson.
No, insanely. But self-indulgence made him great. That's going to be your point, Mark.
Those Beatles albums were great because, like the White Album, because they were self-indulgent.
Because they had the room to explore, right? Yes. I guess the judgment of whether something that self-indulgent is a kind of pejorative term, but the flip side of self-indulgent is revolutionary. Okay, you've got to...
You're right. But more often than not, when an artist becomes self-indulgent, they do not go revolutionary. More often than not, they fail, right? Whether it be a director, whether it be an artist, more often than not, if that album is too long and it's too meandering, for example, when Notorious B.I.G. released Life After Death, I didn't like that album. There are good songs on the album, but as an album, I didn't like it. It was too self-indulgent. Whenever Tupac released All Eyes on Me, and it was a double CD, I didn't like the CD. There's good songs on there, but the album didn't work for me because it was too self-indulgent. I like an artist who is able to edit themselves, who's able to say, what I am making here, I like it, but it's not going to work. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So do what Kendrick Lamar did. Kendrick Lamar released a like self-indulgent artistic thingamajiggy. It wasn't a true album. And he just wanted to get that off. Okay, get that off. But don't include that in the main part of your album because that's going too far for me.
Kendrick's on the more self-indulgent side anyway. But
He's gotten there. I like
him for that. But Beyonce, like Lemonade, you talked about Lemonade earlier, and that's a perfect discipline.
It's a perfect album.
Perfect. She can do that. We know that she can do that. And as far as I know, Lemonade is a Beyoncé brainchild, and she wasn't That's not something that she was heavily edited on either. So we can see, like, the bloatedness of what's this fucking album called? Cowboy Carter is a choice.
What is the name of the album?
Clearly. And yeah, it's too self-indulgent is bad, but that's bad by definition. But I want to defend an artist's right to be self-indulgent if they think that's the right decision to make at the time. And sometimes it doesn't pay off, but we reward the big swings on this podcast. And
it's always a
30-track country album by Beyonce is a big swing.
That is true.
I'm going to say something controversial, and we probably should end this episode now, because I'm about to start fights.
Uh-oh.
But after Lemonade, I don't like Beyonce very much anymore. I didn't like Renaissance. I didn't like Cowboy Carter very much. I think that she released a perfect album. She needs to get back to that. Because her more recent offerings, I did like that live album that she did with Netflix or whatever. Like, I like that. But her recent stuff, it's just not working for me. And maybe that's just me and my taste.
Lawrence Ware with his perfectly reasonable expectations for Beyonce to please get back to producing, like, great arguably stuff. The best pop great album of the yes last 10 years.
A work of genius.
Do that again. Do that again 3 or 4
that's
more times.
Right.
Anything
that's
less
right
than that's just not acceptable.
Let's get do back
it with,
to that.
And do it without taking any artistic risks.
Yes. I mean, because look, Lemonade was good. Beyonce, that album was good. 4 was quite good. She did a string of really, really good. Now, Lemonade is the high mark. But, like, get back to what you do well, Beyonce.
That's what she's fighting against.
I know.
People like you, Lawrence. Get back in your box.
She's not doing a good job, so do what you do well.
There is something to that. People might say to me, get back on your philosophy podcast. What the hell are you talking about this stuff about? your opinions are no more educated than anybody else about the latest TV show, and certainly not about this topic. But, you know, we like it. We like talking about this stuff.
I mean, all I'm going to say is this. Lemonade went 3 times platinum. Beyonce, the one before that, went 5 times. One before that went 4 times. Renaissance went platinum. Cowboy Carter will probably go platinum. The market is speaking.
It's not always about the market.
And I'm sure Beyonce can live with single platinum.
One of the things she might want to do is give the finger to Trump voters, basically.
I agree with
that. And that's okay with it. After being so kind of harsh on country music, and just, I think, genre things are silly in the first place. And so, you know, they're just points of reference, or they're points of communication. They enable you, if I start speaking, you know, use a funk bass line, or I have a metal guitar riff or something, then you understand me. You have a way of getting into the song. So these are just tools. And if she wants to use a drawl and a yodel to get you into a song or whatever, like, that's fine with me. But I do think that there's probably something actually to the idea of, well, what you're doing is just a very surface level thing. And, you know, there's this thing, country music, that is near and dear to my heart, and I've given my whole life to it. And this is mocking that. And I think that there's even something adjacent to that in the whole cultural appropriation concern. Like, of course, it's very different when you're talking about, like, don't steal things from my native tribe that you've been oppressing for 300 years. Like, that's not comparable to rednecks saying, don't call me a redneck and take my music. They're not in the same historical position, but that's the way they feel. That is, in fact, she's acting out their fantasies by being a rich media elite that can pluck, that can determine tastes, and in fact, turn the whole country chart. Like, now I own the country chart. Like, the entire complaint of these people is that coastal elites are taking away our cultural power, and we don't get say in anything. We just want to be our little narrow-minded racist selves, and you're not letting us. And is there?
And she's proving them right.
Do we have any sympathy? Okay, take the word racist out of that, because that was obnoxious. But in the idea, like, is there another group that you could see having a similar, you know, like, funk aficionados? I'm into funk. I love my Parliament Funkadelic or reggae or something. And then some big artist swoops in and does, you know, Paul Simon does a reggae album, and all the reggae purists say, that's not yours to do. You're doing it on a very surface level. Fuck you, Paul Simon. In fact, he sort of did that with some African music. So
yeah, he totally did that.
That's a very...
He's already done it.
So do we have any sympathy for the critics? Everything that I read just says, like, I, you know, this Time Magazine article that I will point people at, Beyoncé backlash is part of a century of cowboy gatekeeping. Basically saying, if you think that she was doing something wrong here, then you must be a racist and you must be participating in the tradition of Jim Crow. And I just think, as Lawrence has pointed out, there's so many legitimate reasons from a country point of view to object to this album that that overall narrative does not work for me.
Doesn't work for me either.
Isn't that just kind of assuming that the country space is only open to performers who are white males? I mean, I understand. I mean, it's even harder for female artists. It's harder for them than it is for male artists to get into this space. But Jesus Christ, like, if you're a black female country singer, you've got your work cut out for you. And it seems like that's what they're saying. That's what the rule is. This is what our blueprint is. You don't fit the blueprint.
I'm sure that that is a legitimate complaint when used against many other black country artists. You know, I had on this show and on my music podcast, Lily Lewis, this New Orleans, she sort of like was an opera trained and soul singer and a crazy good piano player. But some of her, like her recent album is a country album. It's an Americana album at the very least. And she was complaining about, you know, people don't, she's also queer, like that, the idea of a black woman, queer person playing this kind of music she's received. And I think her album is great and is very authentic insofar as I understand it. You know, clearly I don't understand authentic country music, but I really like it. And I would accept if she made that complaint. I just don't necessarily accept if Beyoncé doing what she is doing exactly. I don't think she can make exactly the same complaint. She's just not actually trying, as Lawrence has been saying, to embrace the task of actually making a country album throughout. If she did that and people rejected her just on the basis of her appearance and her demographic and her fame, then that would be illegitimate. But I just don't think that that's what happened.
That is interesting that she is the one who ends up on the CMAs and not some of the black female country artists who have been in the business for years and years and years.
Right.
don't get a chance to be on the CMAs.
I'm not familiar with Linda Martell's catalog, but like it sounds like she is, you know, let her be the ground. I don't know. She doesn't have the fame to be the groundbreaker. So the fact that Beyoncé's pointing at, you know, highlighting people like, okay, sociologically, I'm okay with what she's doing.
This just reminded me of the thing, Lawrence bashing the Grammys earlier. Was it the Grammy Awards where, is it Luke Combs, the country singer who had a hit with Fast Car this year, and he sang the song with Tracy Chapman on stage? It was the first time she'd sung in public in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really big deal. Yep. Luke Combs, it was a really lovely moment, and it was exactly about the white male dominated country culture paying due respect and homage to a black queer woman who had written the music that he was playing. And it was really lovely. It was a wonderful performance. It was a really lovely moment, and kind of contrasts awkwardly with the specter of that Mark just described of Beyoncé, I guess, anticipating country people telling her that she's not allowed to make country music from her incredibly powerful entertainment royalty position.
Shall we just leave it as a question mark with the audience and invite them to?
I don't know. That's a really, please don't let that be the last thing that said on the podcast.
I'm pleased that we had this much to say about this because I wasn't sure that I personally did. And we didn't even get into, you know, there's so many other, once you start thinking more generally about this cross genre stuff, you know, what makes a punk and how people would be posers, like being a poser, I think is really interesting. And so many people, country is just fun. And putting on a cowboy hat and doing cosplay is fun for some people. And I know a lot of people that like Irish music in the same way, not because that they have any deep roots. They just like the music and it's just a fun thing, you know. So delving into the, you know, there's room for another full discussion, like were we to get outside this specific case. And that always interests me.
Well, it's been fun.
I really enjoyed listening to the album many times. I will say that.
Yeah.
It was really good. It was really good doing a podcast on an album. We should do that more.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, we were open to, I would say we're open to suggestions, but I think it has to be the most famous album at that moment. That is at least That's what I would feel comfortable with.
Let's talk about the rap beef between Drake and Kendrick Lamar and why Drake is a punk. Let's talk about that. And why J. Cole is a punk as well.
Well, maybe we can talk for a second in the after talk about such possible spinoff topics. You can look at patreon.com/prettymuchpop if you'd like to hear that. Thanks, all you on the call. Thanks, everybody listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop. Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network, and it's also presented by OpenCulture.com.